Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. My co-host Anthony Brooks is off today. A wild week in the news as a Connecticut woman leads police on a chase through the nation's capital and police open fire. And congressional squabbling spills onto the steps of the World War II Memorial.
I'm out of work.
Well, the reason you are is Mr. Reed is...
No, it's because the government won't do its job and pass a budget.
And political parties are far apart, yet the Massachusetts delegation stands firm.
We're not going to repeal the health care bill until it has time to work. And this hostage situation is just not going to be allowed, period.
But the GOP-controlled House isn't budging either.
This isn't some damn game. The American people don't want their government shut down, and neither do I.
Well, we'll dig into all of these stories and check in on the race for Boston mayor as well with our Week in Review panel. Joining us now is Peniel Joseph. He's a professor of history at Tufts University and director of the Center for the Study of Race and Democracy. Peniel, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Matt Visor. He is with the Washington, D.C. Bureau of the Boston Globe, and he joins us today from the nation's capital. Matt, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have both of you. So let's first of all start right off with all the news that's been coming out of Washington, including what happened yesterday afternoon. According to authorities, 34-year-old Miriam Carey, a dental hygienist from Stamford, Connecticut, drove her car into a barricade near the White House before speeding away. A chase ensued, and then gunshots. Here's ABC News.
A chase up Pennsylvania Avenue. The driver stops at the base of the U.S. Capitol. Everyone inside the Capitol complex was told to shelter in place. Congressmen walking outside were informed to hide their identities.
He says, well, take your pin off. We wear these little pins around. And so he told me to take the pin off. He goes, because you could be a target.
The driver again tries to flee, and police fire into the vehicle, killing the woman. Inside Carey's car, no weapons, but something much more alarming, a one-year-old baby who was unhurt.
Again, that's a report from ABC News yesterday afternoon about events that took place in Washington. Matt, you were there in the nation's capital. What was the scene like for you?
For me, I was getting ready to come down to Capitol Hill. I was in our bureau, which is about 2 miles away. One of my colleagues, Noah Bierman, was on the Hill. It was sort of a surreal day, I think, also coming not long after the shootings at the Navy Yard, which is also right near the Capitol, a couple weeks ago, which resulted in more fatalities than yesterday. It was also coming amid sort of this very heated debate in Congress. So there was a point at which it felt like maybe that was related to the debate. Turns out it wasn't, but in that immediate aftermath, it was sort of it's a tense period already politically here for violence to be injected. It was sort of a shock initially.
Mm. Peniel Joseph, the tragedy yesterday, there are still many facts coming to light and many more questions still unanswered. We're seeing that relatives of Miriam Carey told ABC that Carey may have been having some mental health problems, including postpartum depression. I mean, what do you make of that whole side of the story, that a woman did end up dead?
Well, I think it's unfortunate, and I also think it underscores the debate we're having in Congress right now over the Affordable Care Act and the fact that that's just started to be implemented October 1st. And coupled with the Naval Yard shooter who was suffering from schizophrenia, apparently, there's a connection between violence, lack of access to especially mental health care. And we're seeing that happened in Sandy Hook as well. So it's really connecting all the dots here, where the government shut down over affordable care, but then there's this uptick of violence nationally, accessibility to guns, but also undiagnosed mental illness.
Mm. And Matt, on that point, another thing about the government shutdown was highlighted yesterday is, for example, the Capitol Police, who many of them aren't receiving paychecks at the moment, and yet they were still reporting to duty yesterday. I mean, what are people in Washington saying about that?
Right. I mean, they're in this sort of category where they're what in Washington is called essential employees, you know, which means that they do have to report to work, but they are not paid, and they won't be paid until the end of the shutdown. So there was, you know, some outrage sort of on both sides. Democrats, particularly Bernie Sanders, senator from Vermont, was saying this is an outrage, you know, that these people are having to work and having to protect Capitol Hill, you know, and not be paid for it. So, I mean, I think that there was some political reaction to it. And I think that, you know, I mean, there's also questions about, and there will be questions probably for days and weeks about the reaction of the police. A woman who was unarmed was shot and killed. So I think that is maybe where we're learning more about the incident and what happened and things like that.
Right. I was just going to ask you about that because all the shots that were fired were indeed fired by police officers.
Right. I think 17 shots is what they said were fired, and apparently the woman was unarmed. They are considering her vehicle as kind of a weapon in this incident, just because of the areas in which she was breaching security involved both the White House and Capitol Hill toward Congress. So I think they were reacting to that.
Peniel, did you have anything to say about that?
Well, yeah, I think the fact that she's unarmed is very, very troubling. I know the Capitol Police are going to say because of the area that she was driving erratically, high speeds, they say 80 miles per hour, that this could have been a terrorist attempt. They didn't know. But the fact that they unload 17 in this woman who apparently is just suffering from mental illness is really troubling.
Right. And then there was the one-year-old child in the car, which officials are saying they didn't see at the time. But there's video images of police and possibly even Secret Service agents very close to the automobile itself. So lots of outstanding questions about the specifics of what happened yesterday. But as both of you have pointed out, it's happening all in the context of the ongoing partial government shutdown. So let's talk a little bit more about that. Earlier today, House Speaker John Boehner gave a press conference calling for Democrats to at least negotiate with the GOP.
I was at the White House the other night and listened to the president some 20 times explain to me why he wasn't going to negotiate. Sat there and listened to the majority leader in the United States Senate describe to me that he's not going to talk until we surrender. And then this morning, I get the Wall Street Journal out, and it says, well, we don't care how long this lasts because we're winning. Now, this isn't some damn game. The American people don't want their government shut down, and neither do I. All we're asking for is to sit down and have a discussion and to bring fairness, reopen the government, and bring fairness to the American people under Obamacare.
So that's House Speaker John Boehner being pretty forceful a little earlier at a press conference today. And all, you know, that quote, this isn't damn games. But speaking of games, Democrats are planning to air a particular ad during Sunday night's NFL game between the New England Patriots and the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals, of course, are from John Boehner's home state of Ohio. Here is a bit of that ad.
Speaker John Boehner didn't get his way on shutting down health care reform, so he shut down the government and hurt the economy. House Majority PAC is responsible for the content of his advertising.
All right, so there's a Democratic PAC responsible for that ad. The visual in that ad is of a toddler having a tantrum. Matt, it might be amusing to hear that ad, but basically we just heard two clips that are full of high drama, and yet there's a real issue at stake here. Has the drama surrounding the government shutdown really just superseded the fact that there is, doesn't seem like there is any negotiation going on?
Yeah, I mean, there is very little actual negotiation at the moment. I mean, there's a lot of theater, there's a lot of press conferences, there's a lot of talking. Publicly, you don't get the sense that anybody is privately hammering out any type of deal. I mean, even the White House meeting earlier this week didn't prove very fruitful. I mean, nobody sort of emerged from that with any signs of a deal. And in the meantime, you know, it was the fourth day of the government shutdown, so it sort of continues. And there's not really, you know, there's starting to be some emerging signs of a possible ways out, but really there, nothing is imminent. You know, there's no imminent talks, there's no imminent deal, it does not appear. So we're sort of still at this impasse with both sides sort of talking up their own their own side, and it's unclear kind of what the next steps are going to be.
Right. Peniel Joseph, as an observer outside of Washington, you know, you and I here, we're sitting in Boston, we're regular people. I mean, there's the polling is reflecting this. Americans are frustrated, but it doesn't seem as if yet that the reality or the realization of the degree of that frustration is reflecting on either party in Washington at the moment.
Well, yeah, and I think part of this has to do with the way the media has explained this, because the media has explained this sort of as this moral equivalency, where the Democrats are somewhat wrong and the Republicans are somewhat wrong. And the public, I don't think, has really gotten the full brunt of what's actually going on here, because basically there really is no negotiation here in the sense that the continuing resolution bill was actually still going to be a victory for the Republican Party because it still contained the cuts from sequestration. And sequestration many months ago was supposed to be this sort of nuclear option if there couldn't be a larger budget deal. And now that's actually permanent with this Republican majority. So what's interesting here is that even this budget is about $300 billion less than what Obama really wanted to propose. And it contains these cuts that are seemingly now permanent. So the idea of negotiating, Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and sort of repealing aspects or delaying that seems very, very odd. But I think the way in which the media is portraying it, it's portraying it as sort of, both sides are disappointing in terms of not showing enough leadership.
Matt, I mean, you're a Globe reporter there in Washington. What do you make of Peniel's critique that the media isn't actually accurately portraying the reality of the political situation?
I mean, I think that that there is a attempt to cover sort of what both sides are doing, and I don't necessarily agree that it's being portrayed only as Democrats' fault or Republicans' fault. I mean, I agree with you. I agree with what he's saying in terms of the revenue numbers for the continuing budget resolution could be considered a victory for Republicans because it's at their level. Republicans have not claimed victory on that at all and have tried to fight this turf on health care. But even the polling is showing that Republicans are not winning the fight. Polls generally say that Republicans are to blame for the shutdown. I think that kind of thing is getting through.
Right. There's a new CBS poll that was looking at that's out today that says 72% of those Americans polled disapprove of partially shutting the government over the differences over the health care law, and they blame the GOP for that. But Matt, let me ask you a quick question about what this is doing to the Republican Party itself, because there's evidence of quite a few fractures amongst the GOP caucus. We've got some tape here from New Hampshire Republican Senator Kelly Ayotte on Wednesday, and she argued that tying the Affordable Care Act the Affordable Care Act to the budget just isn't working for the GOP.
Shutting down the government in an attempt to defund Obamacare was not a winning strategy for success. Why? Well, we've already seen Exhibit A, why it wasn't a winning strategy for success, because the government shut down yesterday and the Obamacare exchanges opened and continued anyway.
So that's Kelly Ayotte, New Hampshire Republican Senator. Matt, tell us about those fractures in the GOP that seem to be emerging.
I think Kelly Ayotte is hitting upon one of the fallacies of the Republican strategy, which is that they've been trying to defund Obamacare when, in fact, they've shut the government down and Obamacare is continuing to be funded and continuing to be implemented. But yes, there's a deep division in the Republican Party, in both the Senate and the House. There's movements of some more moderate Republicans to fight another day on Obamacare. They don't think the government shutdown is the right path to have that fight, and so they're trying to move past it and have what in Washington talk is a clean CR, which is a clean continuing resolution, which would fund the government without getting into the debate about the Obamacare. Mm. They've so far not been able to win that, at least in the House. In the House, there's still enough people who want to continue with the government shutdown unless something has changed with Obamacare, which is sort of why we're at where we're at.
Right.
In the Senate side, they're willing to continue. There's enough people like Kelly Ayotte who are saying, let's move on, let's fight this battle at another point. It's not worth shutting the government down. It's not worth not raising the debt ceiling over, you know, let's fight this sometime else.
Right.
So that's caused this deep division within the party that's being prolonged right now, and it's getting kind of nasty.
Well, the question is, how long can that division go on? Because we've got the debt ceiling coming up in just under 2 weeks. We're going to talk about that in a second. But Peniel Joseph, you're a professor of history at Tufts, so give us a historian's perspective on this, because there have been times, and you've studied these moments in history and these groups in particular, that may seem radical in the moment, but they use tools at hand in order to advance an agenda that they think is just and true. I mean, there are a lot of people out there in the country who might think that even though the government did shut down, that is what the Tea Party Republicans are doing in the House.
Well, yeah, I think what's interesting about the Tea Party historically is that you've never had a wing of, I think, any of the parties that was this powerful in terms of shaping the agenda that even goes beyond what the leadership of the party has articulated. So when you think about John Boehner, when you think about the majority leader, they've gone beyond that, this whole idea of shutting down the government. But what's interesting is because of the redistricting congressionally, they actually are not representing the multicultural, multiracial nature of our democracy. Most of the Tea Party caucus is in predominantly white Republican districts. In fact, the number ethnic-wise went up after the redistricting. So it actually doesn't look like America. So they're in safe seats where they can do this and there's no electoral repercussions. One thing I'll say is that what's interesting over the last 7-10 years of the Republican Party, especially since the 2006 election where it became majority Democrat, is that we've seen such discipline among their caucus. Although Boehner doesn't really lead that caucus, it's really the Tea Party that's leading that caucus. And I think it's unprecedented to the extent that they've taken over the leadership of the party, even though they're a minority, because there's a majority of Republicans who fear challenges from their right.
Mm-hmm.
Tea Party local primary challenges, which are also connected to the Koch brothers and super PACs who want to fund this kind of caucus.
Right. So before we move on to our hubbub, let's talk briefly about the other big news story of this week that, again, emerges from Washington but has its antecedents here in Massachusetts, and that is the launching of those health care exchanges through the Affordable Care Act. They made their debut this week on October 1st. The rollout wasn't entirely smooth. It's a huge new computer system to get millions of people insured. The website had several troubles, but Democrats cited the law's positive benefits, and we've got some tape here from Massachusetts Senator Edward Markey.
The Tea Party Republicans are enraged that the Affordable Care Act is going to work. We know it is going to work because we have 7 years of experience in Massachusetts, where now 97% of all adults and 99% of all children are covered.
So, Matt, you're there in Washington. What's the view on the rollout of the healthcare exchanges that began this week?
Everything in Washington is sort of an echo chamber, and every sort of negative thing that has happened gets sort of blown up. But I mean, I think the general impression is probably that the problems that it's had have been for a reason that is a positive one if you want healthcare to be implemented, which is that there's so much demand. There were a lot of people who wanted to sign up for the exchanges, and that kind of bogged the system down. I mean, the system couldn't handle all the technical glitches. The Obama administration had sort of forecasted ahead of time that they anticipated there would be glitches. This is a massive thing that they're doing, and there would be problems along the way, and that they would work to fix those problems. So I think generally, you know, the rollout has been fairly positive for advocates of the law.
And Peniel Joseph, your thoughts?
Well, no, I think the rollout has been surprisingly effective in the sense that so many people have logged on who need health care. The New York Times had a very great story about Affordable Care Act and the millions who it's going to help, but also the millions who are still right above the poverty line and sort of are slipping through the cracks. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of this other America which the Affordable Care Act is going to help, and many people are interested in getting that access.
Right. We'll see how the
other thing I would, sure, I would Matt, add go ahead. Just quickly was that, I mean, the way that this all played out was where the Affordable Care Act, the exchanges were open on the day, you know, of the government shutdown. So it allowed the president an incredibly broad platform. I mean, he already has a big platform, but to talk about health care again and sell this proposal again. So it almost had the opposite effect that Republicans were sort of wanting, which is to turn the tide against, or keep turning the tide against health care. Instead, it kind of gave a more prominent platform for the president to sell it.
Huh. Well, we've just got enough time for some short hubbub stories this week. Matt Weiser from the Boston Globe, what's your hubbub?
Mine, there's a GQ article that's out in this month's issue on Ted Cruz, you know, and he's the senator from Texas. He's kind of at the center of a lot of what's going on now in the Tea Party, and is angering a lot of both Democrats and a lot of most of his Republican colleagues too. So it's a really good read. It's interesting. There's one of the details in there is about how when he was at Harvard Law School, he would only study with people who went to Harvard or Princeton for undergrad. So it gives you a sense of sort of Ted Cruz and sort of how his outlook is.
Wow. And Peniel Joseph, your hubbub?
Well, mine is about Rodney Leon, who's a Haitian-American architect who was recently awarded to be the main designer of the United Nations slavery memorial. And he's the first Haitian American to be awarded something of that stature. So Rodney Leon, he was with Ban Ki-moon. They did the big announcement. It was international competition. 310 people submitted, 7 finalists, and Rodney Leon just won that. And there's going to be a memorial of slavery at the United Nations, and he's going to be the architect. So I thought that was remarkable.
Oh, interesting, especially given that human trafficking is still so much of a global
Absolutely.
Problem. Fascinating hubbub. Well, mine is on a little lighter, but maybe still a little serious note, that there's a Massachusetts legislator who has proposed a bill that would prohibit inappropriate language used by sworn officers of the law, and it could even cost them their badges if they drop the F-bomb or other derogatory terms while on duty. The executive director of the Massachusetts Chiefs of Police Association responded by saying this is radical legislation, too broadly written, a counterclaim made by legislator Benjamin Swan, who's proposed this bill, claims that a lot of bad language is used on the beat by police officers. We'll see where this goes. The idea is what is the public face of public servants who wear a badge? What should it be? And should there be a consequence to language use while on duty? We'll see where this goes. So that's my hubbub for today. Peniel Joseph, professor of history at Tufts University and director of the Center for the Study of Race and Democracy. Always great to have you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And Matt Weiser, reporter for the Boston Globe from their Washington, D.C. bureau, joining us today from Washington. Matt, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
It was great to have you. Listeners, stay with us, because when we come back, we'll talk to the 27-year-old Korean operatic phenom. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.